Welcome everyone into the second RA podcast. Today, July 4th, we're gonna have another special episode. I will be your host for today. I'm Draco655, and we come up with a new segment for all of you. The segment I'm gonna discuss today will be what we have played this week, softcore versus hardcore, and the question of the week. Let me explain the question of the week. It's very simple. We're gonna take a question from the comment of each episode from the YouTube website, and we're gonna discuss. And we're gonna discuss it about the next episode. And we are very, very excited to see how it goes. Let's start this episode with my co-hosts, Shuzi and Benny Human. Hi guys.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Bendy Human here. So glad you've all come back for episode 2. It's going to be a good one.
So let's start with the first segment, guys. How was your week so far?
My week was pretty good. I pretty much focused on exclusively Game Boy this week, so I think we've got quite a bit to talk about there. And yeah, pretty good week in terms of points gained and the amount of fun I had. So good balance there.
I'm excited to talk to you guys about the games I've played this week. The games I've played this week are so all over the place. I love embracing the weird, the obscure, and I'm so excited to share it with you guys.
My week was also pretty like diverse into many aspects of many type of game, and I'm very excited to see what you have all played this week. So my first game I wanted to share with all of you is Yumi Penguin Monogatari on NES by Salsa. So basically this is like a pretty short game where it's a little cute penguin, but this penguin have a goal in mind, and you have a little like penguin girl at the end who you want to impress. So basically the entire game is platforming with a little bit of shootings, and the penguin need to dodge every single food on his road. I'm not joking, he dodge every single food to be less have weight. So the game is all around, the game just want to, this penguin can a little bit like more, eat more, but you don't really want to. And the more the penguin have less weight, the more it can have some nice power. Example, it can like shoot, it can go like run faster. It can like even like shoot little stuff from his mouth. The penguin is so cute. So the set is pretty much like, you complete every single stage and complete the game. You have some interesting challenge there where you need to have the less possible weight and complete them, and some speedrun aspect to it. So that was a pretty fun game.
I feel like we're going through a penguin game phase, because last week I was talking about Antarctic Adventure, and then I believe you played that one as well, and now you're back with another penguin game. So that's pretty funny. We're going through a penguin phase here. But I wanted to talk about my first game that I played this week, and it's Yoshi's Story. So if you guys know me, you know that I love Yoshi. I love all things Yoshi. He is an adorable character with some great games. But the thing is, when it comes to Yoshi's Story, I have a bit of a dilemma. So Yoshi's Story is a set by Dr. Pixel, and it is a fantastic set. In my opinion, a good RA set is one that really... A set is good when it really showcases all that a game has to offer. And Yoshi's Story does that by requiring you to get every single melon in every stage. So here's how Yoshi's Story works. In every stage, there are these fruits you need to eat. You eat 30 fruits and you beat the level. But there are these melons, which are super hard fruits to get, and there's exactly 30 of them. So to get the achievements, you need to collect all 30 melons in every level. And here's where my dilemma comes in. On one hand, I really, really, really want to master this set because it's a Yoshi game. I love Yoshi games. But on the other hand, getting all 30 melons in every level is so challenging. It's really, really hard. First of all, I feel like I have to use a guide because the melon locations are just, some of them are so obscure. And second, there are so many melons where you basically have one shot to do this really specific thing. And if you don't get it perfect the first try, you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the level. So right now I'm in this situation where on one hand, I really want the badge, but I'm struggling, you guys. This is a hard, hard game, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off.
But yeah, I'm very glad you bring this one Yoshi story, because I have tried the set on my cell also. And oh boy, what you mentioned, the melon is pretty, pretty challenging. I mean, if I did not use, like you mentioned, like some tools to just like finding where all, like the route and stuff like this to just figure out where the melon is, oh boy, that's very challenging. And at some point, it's like, even you mentioned the game is like, it's pretty like short, because you just like do pretty much like four stage in through the game, or four or five, and you beat the game. So in order to mastery the game, you actually need to like perfect the stage on the first shot, or you just giving a little bit more time to it, and then if you can pass into the second one or after, to have like multiple pressure, because you cannot play every single aspect or every single stage into one run, so you need to have multiple attempts.
And it's always interesting to me with games that would probably be considered, you know, fairly straightforward and easy, like Yoshi's Story, because it's so simple. But then, you know, you have the achievements on top of it, and it becomes a completely different game in that regard. It's always interesting to see how, you know, the achievements that are for these games essentially get them to make you play them in new ways that you were never thought possible. And yeah, another thing that you said that was kind of interesting is just talking about you really want the badge, but, you know, debating if you're willing to fight through it. And I think that's a struggle that a lot of people have, is they have that sentimental attachment to a game, but how hard are they willing to fight through all the achievements, however difficult they may be, to get that badge to say they did it? And but then in the end, to have that badge on your profile and that satisfying moment, because I know for me, there's games that I have a very big attachment to, but the achievements were extremely difficult. But I love the game so much that I'm willing to just do whatever it takes to get that badge on my profile. I think all of us have probably have at least one game like that, you know?
You're absolutely right, Shoot. And I know, and I think I'm going to persevere and try to get this badge, because I know that if I get that on my profile, that feeling of satisfaction in the end will be totally worth it. But I was wondering, Shoot, what have you been playing this week? I want to hear about your Game Boy style.
Yeah, it's like I said, I've played a lot of Game Boy this week. But I think probably the most difficult thing I played this week so far, at least at the start of my week, was Banishing Racer. So it's kind of a quirky little Game Boy game. It's very, very small achievement set. It's only like 7 or 8 achievements. It's actually 7 achievements. I just double checked. And it's broken up pretty straightforward. There's a couple of score achievements and then completion achievements. So it sounds pretty easy. But the crazy thing about the game is just that the controls are absolutely insane. The game is, you're a little car, and it's a platforming game. And you're able to jump, and you're able to dash. And your dash, if you're higher than enemies when you're in the air, is essentially an attack. So there's some weird parts of the game where there'll be like the ceiling above you, and there'll be an enemy in front of you, and you'll do what'll seem like just a teeny, teeny jump. But as long as you hit the dash right after, you'll kill the enemy. And it starts off really, really slow, really chill, very, very low-key. And then you get to Worlds 4 and 5, and you just absolutely, at least for me, I absolutely wanted to pull my hair out because of the way that the controls were set up. It's just the dashing and trying to perfectly do these platforming jumps and just nonstop dying over and over and over again was definitely something that I wanted to fight through, because as I mentioned time and time again, I love Game Boy games. I love everything that they're about, the graphic, the art style. And so it was something that I was willing to fight through, and definitely had some difficult moments towards the end for sure that I'll probably end up talking about at some point throughout the podcast. So
But yeah, I saw like your kind of like your journey into this this set, and I always say like this car is pretty cute, but I'm very proud of what you have done into this set. Congratulations to your mastery on that one. And for me, a game where my next game, I would say it's I don't know what I have this week, but I plan other fighting games. I mean, maybe it's I don't know. I would like to experience something very different. So the game I wanted to share with you guys is River City Ransom on NES by Remoto and Televangelist. So this is I didn't expect to be that way. It's pretty much I was like expecting like a game where you just like do a stage or do a fight and just maybe moving on, but that's totally not that kind of style. So this is basically like you're into the streets. And you're one dude, a very like well done make little characters, and you need to fight against like almost like clan members, clan person, like bad guys, and you need to raise your skills a lot. So it's like a lot of grinding situation where you need to raise your kick, your punches. You can find some cool like mechanic, like Joe, a lot of stuff basically, and you need to always eat to have some heal back. You gain a lot of money, and the more you grind, the more the rest of the game is more easy for you because you grind a lot. So I was very surprised about this game. I did not finish it entirely. I probably want to go back into this one, but oh man, that game was I did not expect to have so much fun into it. I really did have some fun. So well done into the set. It was very well done.
Yeah, River City Ransom is one of those games I've heard a lot of really cool things about. People talk about it like it's one of those classics, and I've never played it personally, so I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it. Maybe I'll check it out at some point. Another game I wanted to talk to you guys about is Paper Mario Master Quest. So this one's actually a hack. It's a hack of Paper Mario on N64, and the achievement set was made by L. Dexter, and he did a fantastic job with his achievement set. So basically, Paper Mario Master Quest is a hack of the original Paper Mario that takes the game and ramps it up to 11. It is difficult to exaggerate just how challenging this hack is. So I think there's a lot of hard mode hacks that out there that don't really do that much. They just kind of adjust some numbers, make it so you have to grind more. But I'm telling you guys, this hack is awesome and how challenging it is. So for one, there's new content. There's new enemies. There's a few new areas. It's mostly the same game, but there's decent amounts of new content. There's even a pit of 100 trials in the game. So the new content is awesome, but the difficulty is really the main selling point. So I'm not exaggerating when I say I need to think about every single random encounter, every single fight with enemies. You actually have to strategize, even just the random Goombas and Koopa Troopas and Bob-ombs and stuff. You actually have to strategize every single fight, which is something that I rarely had to do in the original Paper Mario. It's one of my favorite games, so being able to experience it in this new way is just absolutely mind-blowing to me. And not just experiencing it in this new way, but getting achievements while I play. This is me in heaven. This is one of those games that when I first heard about it, I put in a set request for. And when I first saw that L. Dexter was working on it, I was so happy to see this game getting a set. So great job, L. Dexter. I am absolutely loving this one.
Yeah, and it's always cool to see something that you want to get made into a set. I always get a little bit excited when I see that. And speaking of talking about strategizing and things like that, especially with games where you have preset enemies or preset locations for things like items and enemies, that kind of allows you to almost come up with some routing in your own head of what would be most optimal. And I find that through a lot of sets that I play, as you play something more and more and more, sure, you put in a lot of attempts and maybe you have a lot of failure sometimes, but through it, through struggle, you're turning coal into a diamond as far as the routing and just making all these little micro optimizations. And it kind of makes me think of the other set I played this week, or one of the other sets that I really enjoyed this week was Barai Fighter. It's a shoot 'em up, And the way that the set is broken up is pretty much deathless for each boss, or each level, excuse me, each level has a boss at the end of it as well. And there's four different difficulties. So there's Eagle, Albatross, Ace, and Ultimate. And like Ace and Ultimate, enemies shoot faster, they take more damage to die and things like that. But the set is just a ton of fun to play through. It's a really, really cool shoot 'em up. There's three different power-ups. So there's rings, there's lasers, and there's missiles. And throughout each level, what you do is you can get your rings, lasers, or missiles up to a power of 10. I think at power 5 and at power 10, they become augmented and they shoot out more. So it's an 8-directional game. So when you have just, let's say, power 1 through 4, a laser, for example, it shoots in front of you. If you have power 5 through 9, you have a laser shooting in front of you and in back of you. And then when you have a power of 10, it shoots in all 8 directions. And so that's kind of how the power-ups work. There's one other power-up in the game that's called the Pod, but or nicknamed Bella, because there's an achievement that's called, like, I call her Bella, where you power up Bella to full, to a power of 4. And it's a little pod that, like, rotates around you and protects you and kills any enemies in your proximity. So that's essentially how the power-ups work. But I think the most frustrating achievement, or the most difficult achievement for that game, is to play on ultimate difficulty, play through all the stages with only the base weapon and the pod with no continues. That was absolutely a crazy achievement. And going back to what we were originally talking about, kind of made me have to think about routing and how to set things up to make sure that I wasn't dying. I guess the last thing that I forgot to mention about the game was there's also what's called cobalt in the game, where you kill enemies, and every 3 or 4 cobalt that you collect turns into a bomb. When you use the bomb, it clears the screen of all enemies. If you save up enough cobalt, though, you get a life instead, and your cobalt is reset. So there's kind of this fine balance between, do I want extra lives, or do I want to have some cobalt stored up for screen clears so that I'm not dying and so that I'm able to survive in these deathless achievements. So going back to routing, it was kind of interesting to figure out, okay, where do I want to bank my cobalt and really make sure that I have an appropriate amount of screen clears to be able to survive.
But yes, this is another game where I saw Shoot This Week played, and I was like, maybe I should give it a shot on my own. And at the start, when I played this game, I was like, okay, this is, I don't understand what I need to do. It's like, I saw like how to shoot, but then I was like, why my character don't follow the line where I was shooting? And until I discovered I needed to hold the button to shooting straight into the direction, I was like, okay, that was how it's done. And then I was able to finish at least the first difficulty, but oh man, that game is more tough than it looked like.
And there's a lot of little quirky things with that game, like the character has kind of it's an auto scroller in the sense that the character gets pushed along, but there's a little bit of screen control as well, meaning if you push the character a certain way on the screen, then it kind of moves the screen in that direction a little bit. But it is like a 90-95% auto scroller. One of the interesting things, though, about doing that and pushing the character in a certain way is there's a few achievements to collect these bonus point capsules. They don't do anything for the player other than add score, but you kind of have to explore a little bit by pushing the character in certain ways on the screen so that the auto scroll goes a certain way so that you're able to find the capsules. I had previously worked on these achievements in the past. Barai Fighter was a game that I ended up coming back to this week and mastering. So I had already gotten those in the past. But one of the other things that you have to be careful about with that game is there's a few parts, probably maybe half a dozen at the most, but they're still a little bit tricky, where you don't want to be in the wrong spot, because as an auto scroller, we all know and love when you get squished by the screen because you're in a bad position. So there's a few parts where you can end up getting squished by the screen if you're not careful, or you need to be in a certain spot to make sure that that doesn't happen to you. So that was my other, I guess, other interesting part about the game, that a lot of auto scroll levels in other games don't allow the player to kind of push back against things, but this one does. So it's a little bit unique in that regard.
So another interesting fact about the game I want to mention is another like shooting mechanic style, but not the one of shoot I've played. Do you remember all those pistol you got and when you're trying to shoot some duck into your screen? But yeah, I'm not talking about that one, by the way. I'm talking about Yoshi's Safari. It's pretty much the same style. It's made by Tails MK4. And it's pretty much like the same style as like you point out your gun into the screen and you shoot fires. And wait, what? Yoshi into a little road and trying to hit it at me and getting coins? What is that? So yeah, I tried this game, but sadly for us, we cannot have the gun reel into the screen. But we have some tools where we can actually like play with your mouse. So that was very like interesting. I don't know what to expect there. I'm just trying to having fun. I spam a lot with my mouse into this game. It was pretty difficult. I mean, I think I beat like 8 or 9 stages. I was like very like at the end of the game. I did not beat the game yet, but I played the hardest difficulty. But that game was surprisingly good. I mean, you have some life, at least some checkpoint you can, like, example, if you die because you like a lot of time, you can run out of times. And if you run out of time, you need to reset the stage, but not the entire stage, but where you are. So if you save up some life, that could be like very like only just for the bosses. You can just actually like stay there and just maybe to find a way to not get too much hit, or just trying to for to fighting the boss. But besides that, I was very surprised about the game. I'm going to try to give maybe more shot into other like shooting style, maybe like the Mario versus the duck game. But man, I'm pretty sure like Bendy is happy of a Yoshi game there. But yeah, that was a pretty good one. So yeah.
Yeah, Draco, that's actually one of the Yoshi games that I haven't actually played. Shocking, I know. But that's cool to see you playing it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I never had the Super Scope growing up. I did have the NES Zapper and Duck Hunt. And the one thing I remember about that game is it did not control well. Most of the time you'd be pointing perfectly at the duck and you shoot and just, nope, you missed. So I think it's interesting that you say the game was challenging even with a mouse. It makes me wonder, how challenging was it with the actual Super Scope back in the day? I don't know. I never had it, but I imagine it must have been pretty challenging. But that's pretty cool that achievements have allowed you to experience that game today. So one more game I wanted to talk to you guys about is something a little weird. I've mentioned before that on RA, I like to embrace the weird and the obscure. So my third game I wanted to chat with you guys about this week is something called Taggin' Dragon. This is an unlicensed game on the NES. The achievement set was originally made by Jack-O-Lantern, and it recently got a revision by Mopane85. He added some new achievements to the set. And basically, Taggin' Dragon is a very simple game. You play as a dragon. It's a top-down perspective. You're going through these maze-like areas. And your objective is to bite the tails of the other dragons. Sounds simple, right? Try to bite their tails, don't let them bite your tail. But here's the thing, this game is utterly broken. This game, I laugh thinking about it, just how broken this game is. It's such a simple mechanic, but the controls just don't work. The hitboxes make no sense. You get close to another dragon's tail, you spam the button, and you just hope and pray that it works and you manage to bite the dragon's tail. It's one of those kinds of games. And I've enjoyed playing this game with retro achievements because it's the kind of game where if I just played it without achievements, I probably would give up on it in a few minutes. But the fact that it has achievements really pushes me to my limits to try to figure out, okay, how do I make sense out of this broken game? How do I strategize in a game that is completely broken? How do I increase my odds of getting the achievements when the game doesn't play fair? And the solution is, I don't play fair either. I found these little tricks to exploit the game's shortcomings. So, for example, one of the game's odd quirks is each time you start a new level, you have temporary invincibility for a certain number of seconds. So one thing you could do is just start out the level super aggressive, chasing after the other dragons, and just try to bite them during that temporary invincibility. It's things like that that just embody this idea of, this game is broken. What can I do to make sense of it? And honestly, in a bizarre way, I have had so much fun with this game.
Yeah, and I think for me, especially too, I mean, with some of the games that I've been playing through, I can definitely relate to that as far as the game is just what it is, and it's an absolute nightmare as far as controls or as far as platforming elements. And you just have to figure out what small things can I do to edge out a victory, right? What small things can I do to put myself in a better position despite the game having all of these shortcomings? And it's got nothing to do with the achievement sets. Obviously, it's just games are what they are when they were made, you know. They're difficult and they've got strange or unusual controls or mechanics or things that just plain aren't fair. So like you said, using iframes at the start to be able to survive or to do something like that. I mean, thinking back to, Banishing Racer, which I originally talked about, kind of made me think up what I did to train myself in order to survive the last world, you know, in level 2 of 3. For world 5, so I guess it would be 5-2. There is a part where there are a bunch of enemies attacking you constantly. And one of the things in Banishing Racer is that every 4 enemies that you jump on consecutively, it gives you an extra life. And for stage 5-3, it's incredibly difficult, but you can stack up a bunch of lives going into 5-3. So that you have plenty of attempts at 5-3, because you have to do 5-1 through 5-3 in one segment, and each level is quirky and extremely difficult in its own way. And also one other thing with Banishing Racer is I couldn't even make it to the end of 5-3 initially, and there was a boss at the end. That was a big concern of mine as well, is what if I get there and I don't have any what if I don't have very many lives and then I lose? Because I was struggling just to be able to get through the madness that was 5-3. So I think we've all had that moment where we're like, okay, this game, these are what the mechanics are. What can I do to get that small edge? I think we've all definitely had that thought process go through our minds at one point or another.
So yeah, my last game for I wanted to share with you, all of you guys, is Was Legend into Super NES by Mario Jr. and GP Llama. So this is like a game where I go to the list and I was like, oh, the name sounds fun. I don't know what it is. Let's having fun. And there we go. I'm talking with this game. Actually, I'm surprised about it. This is the graphic of this game is pretty well cool. It's like you control a guy with a sword and you can do like almost like teenage turtle ninja styles where you have some enemies into your ways and you need to clear them out and then going into the next area and then you need to fight a boss. So in the entire game, you need to collect some goals. You can collect some food. So the food is for getting some health. You can have some one-ups. But basically, you just need to try to not die. But the game on its own was, for my experience, was pretty challenging, difficult. I was literally like just spamming like jump kick because that was I was not taking any kind of damage there. But the bosses, oh boy, the bosses was extremely difficult. it's like you try to figure out what you need to do, like when you see it. And it was very challenging for myself into that game. But generally, I really enjoyed the game. The music was fantastic. I just felt the stage was a little bit too long for me, because if you die, example, you can always like redo the entire stage, but the stage was a little bit too long. But in general, I mean, the set was great, but the game was actually a surprise for me for Super Nintendo. So yeah, I really love it. So let's talk about a very good subject here. So we're going to talk one of the main subjects of the podcast, the softcore versus hardcore. So let's talk about softcore for a little bit for a while. So softcore is in Retro Achievement, you have softcore and hardcore. What's the difference between them? So today we're going to try to give all the information you need to know what is softcore and hardcore. So softcore is basically like you can earn some achievement with softcores, and it's pretty much like you started with, you do your game with 100% instead of 200%. So this is one of the reasons of softcore. And so you gain one time the point you have into your profile. So what do you think about softcore, guys?
So before I give my opinion, I want to just make sure we're on the same page and we understand exactly the difference between softcore and hardcore, because some of our listeners might be new to RA. So the main difference between softcore and hardcore is that softcore enables the use of save states. So you can create a state and then keep playing and then reload a state wherever you want. You could save at any time, essentially. And like Draco said, the point system is a little different depending on softcore or hardcore, where in hardcore you get double the points and softcore is single. Softcore is actually a really interesting tool for developers, though, because for developers, developers can create save states to aid in the process of making achievements. It'd be really difficult to test achievements without being able to test certain parts of the game over and over and over. So developers can use softcore mode to just make a ton of achievements at any point, make a bunch of save states at any point in the game they want. So that gives them the freedom to make pretty much any type of achievement that they want.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about save states and things like that is just that, you know, there is something to be said about being able to practice segments individually and then put them together for a much more cohesive run altogether. I know that from a lot of the speedrunning that I follow, because that's a hobby of mine and my side time is just kind of following different speedrunning communities and what their techniques are and things like that, is one of the techniques that they utilize is setting up different save states and segments, practicing and polishing each individually so that they have that cohesive run put together. And it kind of makes me think a little bit of this week with Banishing Racer. I wasn't able to do that, but there was an invincibility cheat, which it deactivates the achievement if you use it, obviously, so you won't get rewarded the achievement, but it allowed me to get to the boss, be able to practice the boss. And then when I got to the boss after surviving the madness that was 3-5 without invincibility, be able to do it successfully because I had the opportunity to practice the boss so much. So not quite a save state, but something very similar where you're able to put things together a lot better by practicing and focusing on individual specific areas of the achievement.
But yeah, one thing you mentioned, Benny, like you mentioned about deving. I mean, when I dev like 4 of my set, I was using a lot of save states, and sometimes I even like using, like, example, like when I, my, on my first game, when I dev, I was like, people like Spory told me to, like, you can create some like place or save state, like just before the stage, and then you can try to see where, example, you can find some memories. So that helps you really much to identify which part you need and what you don't need. And then like rather than play the entire game or the entire level, you can act if you have found some memories about it, you can say like, okay, Mario is not tiny anymore, but it can be like smaller, or it can be a Cape Mario and stuff like this. So softcore is like very, I think would be the very important for dev person, because you can like actually like find ways to not play the entire game, but it'll help you very neutralize, okay, what is possible, what is not, or testing some stuff. Another factor I should mention, I mean, like speedrunners, is like for me, like Mario Kart and stuff, I could like actually like, it's almost like doing some time trial at some point. Like the more you repeat yourself into one track, the more well you would be at the end, and practicing some place where you don't like visit often, this is a very good tools to practice on.
Yeah, it's absolutely true that save states are an essential tool for speedrunners. And I actually had an incident on Retro Achievements that kind of made me feel like a miniature speedrunner, I suppose, and where softcore mode came really in handy for me. So one use of softcore mode is you can use it to practice a hard achievement with save states before you go for it for real in hardcore mode. I have an example where I did this in the Super Mario 64 bonus set. So in this set, there's one particular achievement where you have to do a trick called a yump in the Vanish Cap stage. So basically, normally when you press the Vanish Cap switch in Super Mario 64, a text box appears. There's a trick called a yump, which speedrunners use, and basically what this means is you could jump off the switch before the text box appears, and that'll save some time. Now, normally the text box appears once you hit the ground after your jump. But if you collect a star before you hit the ground, you never have to see the text box. So the achievement I was going for is I had to perform a yump where I jumped off the Vanish Cap switch and then collected the star without hitting the ground. And you have to pull off a very, very specific jump to make this work. And the thing that sucks and the thing that I was struggling with was every time I failed this jump, I had to go through and collect all of the red coins in the Vanish Cap stage after resetting my game. Reset the game, get all the red coins. Reset the game, get all the red coins. Just for one attempt at the jump, or the yump. So what I ended up doing was I enabled softcore mode, and I said to myself, I'm just going to practice this jump until I can get it somewhat consistently, because it's a pretty tricky jump. And that's what I did. I tried over and over and over until I got better at it. And then I switched to hardcore mode and I got the achievement. So that's a great example of just one of those situations where a softcore can actually be really, really useful.
That's really a good, interesting point there, Bendy. And then I just don't know if you, when I was a kid, I got like some, I want to talk about some, maybe some tools and experience some tools. Like I remember when I was a kid, one of my friend passed me is Game Shark. So it's like Game Shark is pretty much like you can use it on your Game Boy and you can like run any type of password and stuff. And you can get like, for example, for Pokemon. Yeah, I should feel bad about it, but I just wanted to have some fun. And it's pretty much like you can use infinite rare candies, infinite stuff. So you can actually like see how those kind of tools or Game Shark work and like kind of like save states way where you can see another experience of the game. Of course, this is maybe not the real play to it, but I don't know if you ever experienced some tools like that. So, yeah.
I'll say for me, I know we had Game Shark growing up as a kid, and the one thing I remember doing for Pokemon is unlocking Mew via the Game Shark. I know there's a like a way to do it now, doing some weird memory manipulation and things like that. But I'll never forget the memory of like, you know, putting in the Game Shark code, and all of a sudden Mew was the next encounter, or whatever. It would make Mew the next encounter, and I think as a kid, we used Game Shark a little bit just to mess with games and be completely overpowered and things like that. But that was just a little memory that I had of being a kid yeah, next encounter was Mew, and all of a sudden Mew was in your Game Boy, and everyone was like, what the heck is that? So, yeah.
You know, I think it's cool talking about stuff like save states and talking about stuff like Game Shark. And I think the thing we need to keep in mind here is that these are just different ways of experiencing games, right? Is it cheating? Yeah, it's probably cheating. Most people would consider it cheating. But the fact of the matter is, if someone has a different way of experiencing a game, and that lets them enjoy the game in new ways and experience new enjoyment in the game, why not let them do that? Why not let people have fun experiencing the game in ways that they like? And for me, I mean, save states or softcore mode are that could be a big part of it. I know that before I discovered retro achievements, when I would play games via emulation, I was absolutely a save state abuser. I figured as long as I have this tool at my disposal, if I can use this to save myself a little tedium, I'm absolutely going to do that. So I was wondering about you guys. When you played games prior to RA, what was your perspective on save states? Did you guys use save states? Were you save state users or no?
For my own experience, Bendy, I'm not really too a guy where I will enjoy or using save state for some trick. I don't bother to like redo it into the good ways. Like example, like I have played Kaizo game, other game, and I have done some difficulty like Chivos without using any kind of save state. If I wanted to, I could use. But for me, it's like I like the soft core, the soft core by save state, but for me, I like more because, or I see more use because of the fact of developers. I'm really like more into like you have your tools and it's a good tools to progress, identify and do stuff. I don't see myself trying to find a way of like it's like example you it's like you kind of like do it into the opposite way you're supposed to do it. But I prefer to looking into maybe more how to, example, like a guide or like more like finding into the internet or finding something, a source where it's like this fighter can use this and that punch kick into those button and having another like visual aspect or like maybe a videos to see how it goes. But for me, except like diving tools for with softcore, I mean for save state, I don't really want to use them.
Yeah, and I think for me, with going back to your question of experience of using save states prior to being a member on Retro Achievements, I can't say that I used a lot of save states prior to being a member. Even these days, I don't really use the technique of save states to practice areas, but I will say that I've changed my position on that a little bit. With the events that happened this week for Banishing Racer. And I know I keep going back to that, but I mean, when I got to the boss and finally survived 5-3, I got it on the first try, probably because of the amount of practice I had put in just doing that segment. So I think my mind has changed in a bit in the sense that I can use this technique to practice other difficult achievements. You know, Bendy, you mentioned the yump and being able to get it at least somewhat consistent. And it makes me think that perhaps if I am going to attempt more difficult things in the future, that maybe there is some value to being able to individually practice save states because, or to use save states rather to practice. Because, I mean, that is something that speedrunners do to practice extremely, extremely difficult stuff that takes a lot of setup time to get into. And one more thought I had is just that, you know, Draco, you talked a little bit about researching and looking things up. One of the achievements that I'm working on right now is Bomberman for Game Boy. And the way that, just to give a quick overview, is the achievements are deathless. So you have to complete five stages and then do the boss deathless. So the last thing I want to have happen is spend all this hard effort going through, let's say, 2-1 to 2-5 deathless, and then I hit 2-6, which is the boss, and then I don't know what the heck the boss does. and I'm wiped, and I have to spend a bunch of time figuring out what the boss does. So to mitigate that, what I've done as far as research is concerned is look up what the bosses do. I don't need any help with the levels, but if I at least know what the bosses do prior to getting to them, that'll save me a lot of time, and I'll be able to be a lot more successful with the achievements, knowing that the boss mechanics and being able to deal with them and not doing them blind. So there is something to be said about research as well. You made a good point on that.
I think my main takeaway from this conversation is that softcore mode and safe states in general are just a different way of experiencing games, right? It's not a worse way of experiencing games. It's not something to look down on. It's just different, and that's okay. That's fine. And I think save states are at their best when they're used to alleviate tedium. So, for example, you talked about Banishing Racer, and with these achievements where if you fail, you have to go back so far, or in many cases, you have to go back all the way to the beginning of the game. I think these are situations where it's totally fine to use softcore to practice. And honestly, it's like you said, Shoot, you said you had a recent change of heart about softcore, and I'm sort of the same way in the sense that, aside from my Yump example, I could probably count on one hand the amount of times I've switched to softcore to practice a hard achievement. It's something I never really do. But here's the way I need to start looking at things. If the choice is either practice the achievement in softcore or don't get the achievement at all, then I should probably practice the achievement in softcore, right? I have so many achievement sets where I only have one or two achievements remaining, and I've said to myself, oh, that achievement's too hard. I'm not going to go for that one. That one's too hard. I'll just leave the set unfinished. But, like, I feel like if I went back and practiced these hard achievements in softcore, I bet I could pull some of them off. So, I don't know. I have kind of mixed feelings on it. Did you guys have any other thoughts on softcore, or would you like to move on and start talking about hardcore and how that works?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you as far as, you know, perhaps I had overlooked the value a little bit of being able to individually practice things. And as you mentioned, I can think of at least probably a couple, three, if not maybe half a dozen sets that, you know, I'm missing that one or two hard achievements. If maybe I just did this targeted save state thing where I focus on that particular segment, I might be able to earn the badge. So with this week's events and Banishing Racer, it has kind of changed my mind a little bit about maybe the best way to approach things. And it feels a little bit like, you know, you're resigning to it, but you're really not. Because how do you get good at anything? You just practice, practice, practice. But if you have to spend 10 minutes to be able to get to the practice part, or 15, 20, 25 minutes, there are achievements out there where, you know, it takes 25 minutes to get the setup. We've all done an achievement like that. To get to the setup, to have one chance at it, it's painful. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about that technique and being able to utilize it in a way that's beneficial, but still be able to earn it in hardcore just through, you know, making sure that you're practicing in softcore.
Into the upper end, hardcore is like, for me, I feel it is like the try harder ways. I mean, it's like the difficult way, the where it's like everything you put effort on is all benefiting to one place. So hardcore is basically like the same way as work as softcore. So if people don't know, actually you earn some point for softcores and you aim the same point for hardcore. So it's like double the point you get. So the little different aspect to hardcore is pretty much you cannot really like use save state alone. Example, a very good example, you starting into a platforming games, you need to be you start at point A and you finish at point B. So if it said deadliest achievement, you cannot get hit entire time into the stage to earn your achievement. You cannot say like, oh, at the middle of the stage, I'm gonna just create my save state there and then I will just restart there. No, this is not how hardcore is. So basically, you just need to do like, example, what you are normally to do. You play your game, you start your game over, and you just go to point A to point B.
So, I believe that all three of us have this in common where we play almost exclusively in hardcore. We pretty much always play in hardcore with very, very rare exceptions. And I wanted to start a dialogue with you guys. I wanted to ask, why do you play in hardcore? For me, there's a number of reasons, but the first one I wanted to talk about, and it's something really silly, is when you play in hardcore and you get a badge on your profile for 200% completing a game, you get this yellow border around the badge. And I just wanted to talk about this. It's such a small thing. It's literally pixels. It's literally a virtual badge, but there's something about that yellow border that is so satisfying. I love the feeling of that yellow border. I love being able to look at my profile, see a wall of badges, and each one of them has that yellow border around it. There's something truly special about that. I'm wondering if you guys agree with that or if that's just me.
No, I mean, seeing the yellow border, obviously getting double the points is also a big factor. But no, the yellow outline saying, yeah, I did this in the hardest difficulty possible, is a big thing. And going back to the competitive aspect of things, getting it on that hardest difficulty and saying, I did this and I did it in the most difficult way possible, and being able to have the proofs for that is a big deal. And as far as the difficulty of hardcore is concerned, there is something just really satisfying, especially about, let's say you didn't even use save states, about being able to just nail something on that first try or that second try or third try, when it might take another player tens or even hundreds of attempts. So a lot of the time it just comes down to that personal satisfaction of being able to get really difficult stuff done. And a lot of the time it just comes down to, for me, I know personally, maxing out points, getting twice as many points in a title just by playing it in hardcore. So I think that that's true. I think the three of us primarily do focus on hardcore, for the most part. But like I said, my eyes are opened a bit after this week's events to potentially being able to obtain more hardcore stuff by dialing it back a little bit and then fast forwarding, right? So dialing it back in the sense of creating those save states to practice difficult parts, and then fast forwarding by being able to target those areas and games and exponentially increasing my skill versus having to spend 10 minutes getting to a spot. There's just that repetition. The repetition is really what the key is. And if your repetition is delayed, then you really don't get as much practice to be able to do that.
But yeah, so like the satisfaction of all you two mentions, I mean, having this little white yellow bo yeah yellow border to your badge, I mean, one is look beautiful and it's like very satisfying into like many ways to say like I have done this, everything is done, everything is clear. I mean, I did like the good ways, or for me, like the good ways, you try hard, the best of you can, and you succeeded to something. And I have a little story about it. I was playing Paper Mario 64, and so starting of one of the month, I did like 1 week of Paper Mario. I played through the entire game and defeating Bowser, and then after that I left the set away from maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then I started it's like, hey, maybe I should master it and just get my beautiful badges to Paper Mario. And then when I played, I did the grind. I did everything about collecting the pieces, the badge and stuff. And then at the end of the end, when I was almost there, almost at the end of the set, I was like, okay, I just need to do 2 badges, and I forgot the badge. I did not transfer the badge from Peach to my inventory, and I didn't have anything else to prove about it because, yeah, I don't have any more proof to say I have completed the game. So the feeling to need to is like I could even like if I wanted I could just use a save state. I could just like okay the save state to just choosing there and just redo maybe some part and. So like yeah, you have done your part, but no, I realized after this they told me like you need to do the entire game again So after maybe just the day, I realized that I just grind for another like 16 to 18 hours to just redo the entire game, starting back over, doing all the events and all the grind, and getting this badge. For me, that was the true hardcore ways, or the true successful ways to get something and be proud of it.
That's rough, dude. Missable achievements like that, that sucks having to go back and do the whole game again. But at the same time, it's like Paper Mario is one of my all-time favorites, so I probably wouldn't be too upset to have an excuse to replay the game, but I can see how that would get a little old. And one thing I want to clarify to anyone who might not know is that when you're playing in hardcore mode, you can still create save states. You just can't load save states. So I almost feel like if you're playing something like an RPG or a game with a lot of missables, it might not be a bad idea to get into the habit of loading or of creating save states from time to time, just to have them, just in case something goes wrong like that. It's something I've never really done personally, but now that we're having this conversation, it's got me thinking, and I don't know, this conversation is kind of getting me to maybe reevaluate some of my RA habits. Like, maybe there are some changes I can make. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think for me, you know, you mentioned missables, which I'll clarify for the audience out there, for people that are a little bit newer to RA as well. So missables, by context, you can kind of guess a little bit what they are. They're achievements that can be missed during a playthrough. Or like, let's say, for example, an item that you have to collect, and then the item is only temporarily available in the game, and then you play through that part of the RPG, you miss the item, and then you can't go back. And what a lot of developers will do that's really nice is they'll put an M next to the achievement, or they'll put an asterisk, which denotes that it's a missable. And it's been really nice for them to do that, because I know for me, for some RPGs in the past, I've been really cautious about kind of going through the achievements and making sure that I'm not missing anything, because RPGs are long games, right? You don't want to have to go through an RPG twice unless the achievements force you to, for whatever reason. So it's really nice that some developers do put either an M or an asterisk so that you're aware of missables and then you don't miss them. And the other thought that I had on that is, if you save in a bad spot in an old game and there's no exit back, so it kind of brought me back to thinking about Final Fantasy Legend 1. There's a boss called Machine. And when you get into Machine's room, you can't leave the room. So I got into Machine's room. My character was not prepared, didn't have the right setup to be able to defeat Machine. And I had saved the game. And I think... it's embarrassingly enough, but we've all probably had a moment or two where we've saved at a bad spot. And because we've saved at a spot where we're screwed, either through there's too many enemies in the room, for games where you can, save quite a bit, or you put yourself in a bad position and you have to end up re-going back through things. So that kind of brought me to thinking about that through our conversation of missables and just putting yourself in risky spots or risky positions with saving and things like that. So
I think that would be pretty good for the topic of softcore and hardcore. If guys have any more question about it, leave us maybe a comment down below the videos to make sure if we maybe missed something into softcore and hardcore and you will want to know. So here's the new segment of we're going to do probably each week. So we have a question, and we're going to try to answer the most of we can. So the first question we're going to do for today would be the journey of the grind. So the grind could be into many aspects, but I'm very curious to see how the grind started from all of you guys.
So I wanted to talk about the early days of retro achievements for me. Because when I first started retro achievements, it looked very different compared to how I play now. When I first started the grind, well, I didn't view it as a grind at first. I just viewed it as, this retro achievements thing is so cool, I'm going to have fun playing games. So if you look at the first few games I mastered, There's actually a bit of variety there. A lot of it is my childhood games. You have things like WarioWare, Mario Kart 64, Super Mario World. But then also, I knew from an early point on Retro Achievements that I wanted to go for badges. So some of my first games I've mastered were things like Color a Dinosaur, Solar Jetman, NES test cartridge. So basically, the beginning of the grind for me was a mixture of playing childhood games and going for badges. And I think the going for badges thing has really been what the grind has been all about for me to this day. I have always been more of a fan of going for badges rather than going for points, because I figure if you go for badges, that fills up your profile, and I like how that looks. Plus, if you go for badges, you get points along the way. So that's sort of a general overview of what the grind looks like for me, just a little glimpse into the early days versus the modern days, what it looks like for me at least. But that's the cool thing about Retro Achievements, is the grind means something different to everyone. So I want to hear from you guys. What does the grind mean to you?
Yeah, well, I just want to say, I mean, as far as you describing that, it's so interesting, Bendy, to hear kind of that evolution of your style of playing throughout Retro Achievements, because it makes me kind of think to me going through a similar process in terms of thinking and kind of what I initially hoped to accomplish versus what I hope to accomplish today, 3 years later. When I first started on Retro Achievements, I was pretty focused on badges and getting more badges on my wall, especially things that I'm a big fan of, games that I grew up with. And these days I'm a little bit more focused on the competitive aspect. As a lot of people know, I'm trying to break into the top 100 at some point down the road. But it's really interesting that you mentioned that as well, because it, we could have an entire dialogue about just what is your play style? You know, some people go for points straight up. They don't care about badges at all. Some people are really into badges, like you said, and having a nice giant stack of badges where people have to scroll down and keep scrolling down your page to be able to see every badge and just have this giant wall of badges. Some people are all about retro ratio, you know, getting a high retro ratio. Some people are all about their completion percentage and keeping it really high. And there are some people on Retro Achievements that are 100% completion, and they're very high ranked, you know, and they focus exclusively on one game at a time. And so there are so many different styles of focusing on, different goals that you want to accomplish through Retro Achievements. And going back, I guess, to your original question, for me, these days, the grind to me is mostly point oriented, but you got to have that fun mixed in there, right? I played a lot of Game Boy games this week. I had a lot of fun. If you're not having fun, then the objective is lost upon you. So you got to have fun with it. But yeah, I would say the grind, what the grind used to mean to me versus what it means today has definitely changed a little bit. And these days I'm a little bit more focused on points, but I have to mix in fun too in order to have a good time on Retro Achievements. But that's essentially what the grind means to me.
For my own views of the grind, I mean, obviously, when I people know, I was a speedrunner before, so my experience to say like, okay, I got that many world records, so my journey is like, I want to be proud of be on the top 10 players. I want to be like highest possible way. So for me, it was like I ruined like pretty much maybe like a years just playing the entire game, which I like all the game I just enjoyed the most, and I was looking every single aspect of each Mario or Pokemon game, because for me that was pretty much the easiest way to grind my point out. It's because those factors of games, and they have plenty of those. So for me, my grind is like, even still today, I don't think I have changed that much since, but it's like I did not expect having a lot of badges or mastery into my profile, but the more I was about to perfect those games. The more I enjoy it, the more having a lot of badges anymore. And I really want to finish a lot of games, which I did. But the grind was so intense for like almost 2 years right now. And I just keep pushing myself, keep every single day, even if it's like 500 points, even if it's like 1k point each day. I was so into the grind, and I'm still into the grind, but now I realize how much the grind kind of like affect me in some ways, because some days I don't even feel wanted to play some games anymore because I have played like too much of games. I don't even like, and they have like so many games into RA, which is fantastic, but at some point, like, where you're just like trying to figure like the point you want to target or which game you want to just for the points and just trying to climb the ladders, you don't even like see, or you don't even like, yeah, or you don't even enjoy or see the games you're trying to do. And that could be like so many bad aspect. And I don't know like how to describe this, but I mean, I really love the grind, but at some point, like, we really need to realize how much this can affect us in some ways. So I'm very to see, yeah, I'm very curious to see how for you guys you can handle that aspect.
You know, Draco, I totally get where you're coming from when you talk about this idea of the burnout. When you're going for points and it gets to the point where it's like, it starts to feel like a chore. You don't want to play games anymore. And I don't really get that so much on RA, but I understand the feeling. To go back to my MMO background again, I used to play RuneScape, right? I used to be addicted to RuneScape, and that was a game where I would always focus on the grind, on getting those numbers higher and higher and higher. And I think it comes back to what Shoot said earlier. There are so many different ways to enjoy retro achievements. You don't have to go for points. You could go for badges, you could go for retro ratio, you could go for average completion rate. But the point is, you have to find whatever goal works for you, whatever goal you find fun. It all comes down to fun, right? We're doing this because we like playing games. We like having fun. And I feel like that might be what you have to do. If you get to the point where grinding for points is just, it stops being fun, maybe it's time to reevaluate your priorities. I've definitely had times on RA where I've just sort of changed things up spontaneously. Like, for example, one thing I've been kind of struggling with is I really want to get my average completion ratio above 90%. So meaning I have an average of 90% completed across the games I've played. But at the same time, I found that sometimes I don't want to play games that I already have in progress. Sometimes I just want to start a new game. There's a game I really want to play. I want to start a new game, even though it'll hurt my numbers, my stats. And it comes down to fun. If I want to play a new game, I should play a new game. I shouldn't obsess so much over these meaningless numbers, you know? I feel like the more we treat retro achievements as a numbers game, the more we sort of suck the fun out of it. And I feel like that's kind of a dangerous road to go down, because retro achievements is such a cool thing, and the last thing we want to do is suck the fun out of it.
Yeah, and you guys both bring up some really excellent points that I touched on earlier about that fun to points ratio and kind of finding that Goldilocks or that sweet spot. Because at a certain point, you know, I'm the same way, Bendy, where I've been, one of the things I've been focusing on, obviously my number one goal is to try and breach the top 100, but I also want to slowly over time, and it's been kind of naturally happening, so I've been happy about it, is getting that average completion ratio up, or average completion percentage rather, to a higher number. And it's been funny because I've been going back to games that I've either played in the past that I really enjoyed, or games that are getting a revision. So more achievements are getting added to the original set and completing those. So naturally my percentage has been going up, but I'm still having that fun. But I completely respect and understand, you know, wanting to kind of take a long, hard look in the mirror at certain points in your life and be like, okay, maybe I should just play something for fun today. and say, you know, screw the points or screw retro race or whatever, because as I mentioned, there are so many different ways to enjoy the website. And the other interesting thing about all of this that we've talked about a little bit in the past is just that there's so many games to play and there's so many achievement sets coming out that it can almost be a little bit overwhelming. But as you've mentioned to me off the podcast, this is not a bad problem to have. This is a good problem to have. You know, this is something that's great that there's so much variety and there's so many new things coming out and so many different achievement sets coming out and things to explore. And it even kind of leads me to my next thought, which is just that you discover a lot of games through RA because you say, oh, this is a new set. What's this about? I know for a fact that I've seen a new Game Boy set come out, or even a few Mega Drive sets come out in the past that I've just been like, wow, this is kind of a cool game. So it's we talk about so many different ways to play on retro achievements and then so many new sets coming out. These are double-edged swords, but a lot of the time when you look at them in a positive light, it's really great, you know, being able to see things through a new lens, see retro achievements through a new lens, I guess would be the way to put it.
I wanted to ask you guys, since the two of you, Draco and Shoot, you tend to focus more on points and ranking than I do. Shoot, I know that you've been going for top 100 for a while now, and I know you're going to hit it soon. And Draco, I know you've been chasing after top 25, and congratulations, by the way, on reaching it finally. So I wanted to ask the two of you, when you're climbing the ladder, when you're increasing the ranks, when you're going for points, what keeps you motivated? What keeps you pushing just one more rank, just a little higher, just 1,000 more points? How do you stay motivated through all this? What keeps you going?
Well, thank you for saying that kind of stuff to me, Mindy. Well, I mean, motivation, I think it would be like still at the start. I mean, like seeing the exciting moment to just getting an achievement and getting another achievement. And then play games you enjoy. I mean, the grind is like, even if you love those childhood games, those games keep you always intact, and those games you will always enjoy. And that's one of the way to you can get so much motivated to play, because, oh my God, Mario Party 1. Oh, yeah, I need to do Mario Party 2. And then Mario Kart, and then you just keep going. And the time goes so fast. And you just keep playing those childhood games. So this is one aspect for me, I think, just keep me in track. And the other aspect to keep me in track is my family into RA and all my person which I really care about. And they just keep me pushing like every single day. Like some people saw me, some people support me. Some people say like, oh, you have done this, congratulations. Some people like trying to give me some games to maybe you should try this one. This one is fantastic. Maybe you should just give it a shot. And maybe some other aspect, I'm pretty sure you are, but I have goals in mind. I have rivals in mind. So I'm ready to see if you have ordered maybe some rivaling to RA, because I have some people like when I was a little bit like maybe into the down ladders, my first rival was Spory. It was like, oh man, I need to beat Spory. He is my friend. I need to beat it. Doesn't matter what I need to do. I need to beat it. And then I beat Spory. And then I beat another friends. And then I just trying to figure out another friends until I just go up another rank. Oh, I'm close to maybe this rank. Maybe if I do a couple games here and here. And that's pretty much what inspired me. What just like keep in love with this wonderful website and the crime, and even my girlfriend support me to this way. It's like, congratulations, you just in top 25, or all those little aspects. If I can give a big tips to everyone to listen to this, if you're grinding, just having a rival, someone you want to reach, someone, or just a little goals, it doesn't matter the goals. You are a casual player, it's totally fine. You want just achieve top 500, it's perfect. Any kind of goals count here. Any type of numbers or etc. It's just numbers. It's just games. Don't ruin the fun out of it, because, or just like, oh, I get some, maybe some game go down or go up. Doesn't matter. Which is matters is how much you're well around, how much you make friends, and then pretty much everything of that aspect will give you guys more funds, more contacts, more, I don't know, everything you wish into your journey of a grind. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, he brings up a great point with rivalry, you know, and having that competitive thing with friends. And it's always cool to, I think I mentioned this on the first episode, but talking a little bit about seeing other people share your common struggles of sets that you've played through as well. That's always really interesting to see other people try and tackle sets that you've tackled, especially when they're streaming it, and kind of just see what they're trying. And with the rivalry thing, you know, having that bonding of talking strategies back and forth, you know, what did you do for this achievement, or what did you, how did you tackle this achievement? And having that dialogue that, you know, you might not otherwise have. So I think that for me, for motivation, going back to your original question, Bendy, you know, with being motivated and continuing to stay motivated, it's one of the biggest things is, you know, being able to have those conversations with other people that have mastered those tough sets, and to ask them, you know, what did they do for this or what did they do for that? But also just having those, you know, friends that you cheer on that are going for top 300 or top 500, or seeing other people be able to reach their goals motivates me as well, because it kind of makes me think that, you know, we all share this website together and we all have one common goal. Which it may sound kind of cheesy, but we all have the same goal at the end of the day, which is to have fun. And seeing other people have fun, you know, mastering sets that you've mastered and being able to share that exciting moment with you where they've been able to master the set only motivates me to continue to push and to see myself through all these moments, these damageless achievements, these deathless achievements, some of these ridiculously difficult achievements, having those moments where your friends are cheering you on and they're with you to share that moment with you is always a really cool aspect. And, you know, again, going back to the rivalry, just having other people that you see, wow, he did that, I'm going to give it a try and see what I'm able to accomplish with it. Having those rivalries and those friends that they just play really well, you know, they execute really well. Having friends that, you know, just have a lot of difficult achievements under their belt, and being able to say that person really knows how to execute when the time is tough, and when things are tight, they're not afraid to, you know, put on their big boy pants, as we say, and be able to just tough it out. So, yeah.
I think you guys make a great point about these friendly rivalries and the social aspect of RA. I remember back when I was a Steam achievement hunter, I felt like I was sort of going at it alone. I didn't really have other people I was competing with or comparing myself to. But now on RA, it's like we've made all these friends, and yeah, it's just like you said, Shoot, and just like you said, Draco, we can talk to each other, we can compare achievements, compare strategies. There's that feeling when you look at the leaderboard and your friend is just a few spaces above you, it really does push you to want to beat them. Even though I don't care about points that much, even I get that desire sometimes. But now I'm at sort of an awkward position where all of my friends on RA, they're either significantly higher rank than me or significantly lower rank than me. I don't really have any friends who are close to my rank, so it's kind of hard. I feel like I've lost that rivalry. I almost feel like I need to find a new rival. So I guess since I have this podcast audience listening, hey, if anyone wants to be in my rival, oh, if you're in like the low 90s to high 80s, hit me up. I could use a rival.
But yeah, so Bendy make another good point here. I mean, you can, it's like, if you're too far or too low to some degrees of people, you can maybe lose interest into, but if you keep that in mind, I mean, the grind can significant a lot to one person, to in others. Like, If I compare myself, even if I can say like, hey, I'm top 25, if I compare myself to maybe some other person like above me, I would probably say like those people are better than I do, but it's not true. Everybody have his own skills and abilities. Like I know for a fact if I want something real bad, I will always push harder and harder. And if it's take 2 years, 3 years, no matter the time, it's almost like time trials. I have literally spent 8 hours on one track to get good at the track. So if I can spend 8 hours on one track in one day, I'm sure I can probably do a year's and just trying to push my rank harder. So grinds can affect everybody in many ways. But the biggest thing is like, don't compare yourself to others person. Every person is different. I did experience like myself, even myself, to compare myself too much to the others. And that did not well pretty good. But if I see what is all about like around me, the grind is mainly positive also, because the grind can give you the energy, the hypes, they can give you the just for just pushing a little bit, like just passing some games faster, or just even like having fun into many ways. The grind is not, it's not just only like a bad effect, it could be a good effect, or it could be on any aspect. But just keep looking, and I'm pretty sure anybody can do it. If I can do it, you all can do it. So yeah, so what if you have some aspect positive of the grind, just speak up, I guess.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you, Draco. This idea that the grind isn't necessarily a negative thing. It could absolutely be a positive thing. It could be a motivating force. It could foster friendships. There's so many positives that could come out of this. And I think it's good that we're focusing on this. I just wanted to say, Draco, I think it's fascinating listening to you talk about your speedrunning background, because the more you talk about it, the more I see these connections between speedrunning and retro achievements, right? Because think about it. Both speedrunning and retro achievements, they're about persistence, they're about competitiveness, they're about climbing up the ranks, getting better and better, improving yourself. So I'm thinking about last week when you were talking about how you weren't so sure about retro achievements when your girlfriend first told you about it. You weren't sure if you wanted to do it. And the more I think about it, I feel like more speedrunners should give retro achievements a try. I feel like over the years, as RA becomes more popular, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lot of speedrunners coming over here and checking it out.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned speedrunning, because like you said, you know, there's certainly speedrunning achievements and things like that. A lot of titles don't have speedrunning achievements, but it's almost like some of the core skill sets, I guess, of speedrunning translate really well onto retro achievements is almost what you're saying, I think. And I definitely agree with that. You know, I'm not a speedrunner. I've done a little bit of real casual speedrunning in the past, but some of those core skill sets really translate well into execution. You know, damage list, death list, doing things in an unconventional way, or really unconventional achievements. And so with the core skill sets of things from speedrunning coming over, it's very possible that, you know, throughout the future and in the future, there will be people that do come over from the speedrunning community and mesh with the retro achievements community in the future. So, yeah.
So one thing you mentioned, Bendy, which I ensured about speedrunning, which is, I'm really interesting into, is like you mentioned, or maybe we did not discuss about it, but the leaderboards. Did you ever experience the leaderboards? It's pretty grindy. I mean, example, Mario Bros. 1, you can do a stage and you can do the fastest way. Mario Party, you can have mini games with set up by devving about like a little bit aspect of leaderboard aspect or grind. Those leaderboard can be actually very grindy on its own. I mean, I play a bunch of Mario Kart 64 and I was trying to get those little top one rank just for fun. I did not get any more achievement, but speedrunner like those quiet leaderboard. So I'm I'm very curious to see how much those leaderboard affect you guys into maybe some grinds or maybe not. Could be interesting to maybe see more aspect in the future for Richard Schumann about leaderboards.
I will say I was never that into the leaderboard aspect of retro achievements, but there are a few exceptions to that. So for those of you who don't know, you can enable leaderboards on retro achievements. And after, it might be something like speedrun the game or speedrun this level or go for max points, as many points as possible or something like that. And the thing about the leaderboards is you get this leaderboard pop-up that shows the top 10 or top 8 or something like that, the top few players on the leaderboard after your leaderboard attempt. And I will say, sometimes when I see that leaderboard pop up, I'll recognize the name of one of my friends on there. And when I see my friend on a leaderboard, that motivates me to try to beat them. I have had some situations where normally I wouldn't care about the leaderboard, but I saw that pop up and I saw my friend's name on there. And I said to myself, you know what? I think I'm going to try this again, try to get a better time, try to get a better score, because I want to beat my friend. I really want to see if I could pull that off.
I think it's always cool to see the leaderboard pop up through the game when a leaderboard segment starts. So, you know, and then for you to see your friends, I know when I played Banjo Pilot and I saw both both you, Vendi, and Draco and your times on there every time I would complete a track. That was kind of cool. And that makes me think of, I guess, just one other thing, which is rich presence, which is really cool, where if someone's added rich presence to a game, if a developer's added that, when the person's playing the game, it will say, for example, so-and-so is on stage 5 with 3 of this power up with 4 lives, depending on how nuanced they made the rich presence. But it's kind of cool to be able to almost have a window, even if someone's not streaming, to have a window of insight into what exactly is going on while they're on retro achievements. So kind of the leaderboard aspect made me think of one of the other cool aspects that developers add sometimes, which is rich presence.
So what a very good subject or first like question here. I'm very impressed of how everything goes, and I hope the audience will really like this segment. I'm very curious to see for the futures of question we have, but keep in mind, guys, the grind is always a good factor. Just try to find friends and try to find the ways you enjoy how to play game. Don't rush anything. The rank would be always be there, trying to have the most fun of it. But to the final, I think we can say like we have a great time for today's. I just want to put some notes. Make sure to follow us on YouTube, guys, on RA Podcast. Make sure to hit that bell notification to not miss any of those episodes. And make sure to leave us a comment down below the video to make sure for the next question of the week would be. Thanks again to Shoot and Bendy for this week. And I hope to see all of you guys next weekend. Bye.